I'm pulling out of my driveway. We all know what that means. It's time for another drive to work. Okay, so last we talked, we were discussing Rise of the Eldrazi. And I started talking about some cards, and I will continue doing some card stories. Okay. Oh, first let me begin, by the way. I realized that last podcast I made a mistake, which I did not realize. One of the things I do sometimes is I'll pull into my parking space, and then I'll turn it off, and then I'll think about what I said, and then I'll go, wait a minute! So I talked about the level up creatures, about whether or not we decided to have them go up or down, whether or not the power and toughness was higher up, and then as you leveled up, you went down and improved, or you started low and went up. And we fought back and forth on which way it went, and I implied last time that it went up, which it didn't. It went down, which I figured out like 3 seconds after I finished. But I liked my last podcast, so I decided not to retape it. For those not in the know, what will happen is I'll do a podcast, and I'm not happy, I'll redo it. And the one you heard last time was my third take on Rise of Eldrazi, and I was finally happy with it. And so, anyway, I made a mistake. I'm fallible, for those that haven't yet figured that out. Okay, next, Awakening Zone. So Awakening Zone is a green enchantment, 2 and a green. And beginning of upkeep, you get a spawn. So one of the things that was a big player, so I talked about this last time, that Brian wanted to do mana crystals. They were too close to poison, so we ended up doing, they called them mana bots for a while. They eventually got turned into Eldrazi spawn. Although in R&D, the people that were around at the time, like I know Eric Lauer still calls them mana bots. They ended up being a pretty crucial part of the design, because what happened was they were in the set to fuel Eldrazi, to get Eldrazi out. But the interesting thing is that they ended up having another function, or multiple other functions. So, for example, you could use them. There were strategies in this environment where you would beef them up, where you would get a whole bunch of spawn, and then you could turn them on and attack. So there was a strategy where you overran people with spawn. There were some strategies where you were just buying time, and the spawn wasn't you casting things with them. They just, for every spawn you made, is one less creature that hit you. So just a means to prevent stuff. There was aura strategy, so sometimes you could build up your spawn and make them bigger. And anyway, the spawn ended up being very, very interesting. And so this was definitely one of those cards that, like, making a spawn, oh, well, it could go in a ramp deck, but it also could go in a more a wider deck where you're attacking with lots of creatures, or go in a deck where you're stalling. So it was an interesting card, and then this card actually went in a lot of different archetypes. It wasn't just one archetype, because the spawns went in so many different archetypes. So one of the things that when you're designing that's really important is whenever you can find an aspect of your design that has dual function, or you know, multiple function, more than two sometimes, that's really good. And that if you can make something that people have different ways to use it, it just broadens, it allows you to take a singular idea and a singular mechanic and just gives you more depth. And so one of the things that I think Rise of Eldrazi did well is the different things, the different components of it could mix and match and give different strategies. And one of the reasons that it's a very beloved draft set is there are a lot of different ways to play the cards. That even though the cards do the same thing, when mixed and matched in different ways, cards become, they have different values to them. And it's something Magic is good at in general, but it's particularly good in Rise of Eldrazi, especially in Limited. Next is Balaged Scorpion. 3B, 2-3 Scorpion. ETB, destroy a creature with power 1 or less. So one of the things that Brian did, or Brian's team did, and development, was in order to make this battle cruiser magic, in order to allow the big things to come out, there was a lot of aggression early on to destroy small things. And this is a good example that, as you'll see, there's a lot of, like, play early and deal with early threats so that you can get to the later threats. And cards like this are a good example where it's very, very good with dealing with early threats, but not particularly bigger threats. So it slows down the environment without stopping the bigger thing of being created. It also encourages you to sort of level up your guys or to get enchantments on your guys. You know, there definitely were smaller creatures that could get bigger, and because you knew this was around, you wanted to, you know, waste no time to make your guys bigger. Because there were a lot of level up guys started with one power, and they turned into something pretty awesome, but if the Scorpion came before you got them, you know, out of the range, the Scorpion could take care of them. Also, by the way, because of that, the Scorpion was valuable not just early game, but later game sometimes, that if you could bring out your level up guy or bring out some creature that you plan to buff and the Scorpion could come out then, it was useful later in the game. It wasn't just useful. There were more things that had one power than normal. Also, by the way, it could destroy spawn. That was another thing that was able to get rid of spawn. Okay, Baneful Omen, 4BBB. It's an enchantment. At the beginning of your upkeep, reveal your top card, and then all opponents lose life equal to converted mana cost. So this card, I think, was inspired what we call Bob. What's Bob's real name? Bob Marr won one of the Invitationals and made a card called... What is Bob actually called? It's a black creature... This is where my inability to recall names comes out to haunt me. You guys are screaming right now because it's a very, very famous card. It'll come to me. Anyway, that was a card in which you revealed the top card of your library, you got to put it in your hand, but you lost life equal to it. And this card was definitely turning that on its ear. It's like, well, I'm going to reveal cards, and instead of me losing life, I'm going to make you lose life. Now, I don't get the card, but I do get a... It does allow me to put big, powerful things in my deck. And definitely one of the themes of Rise of Eldrazi is we want you to play with big, expensive cards. And this card says, come on, big, expensive cards can do big things. The other thing you'll notice is we set to all opponents, not just to an opponent, which is definitely a sign of us thinking more about multiplayer play, that this is the kind of card that, oh, if I'm playing in a game of Commander or something, oh, that this thing can, you know, really have a huge impact on all the players, not just a singular player. Next, Battle Rampart. So it's a wall, a red wall, for 2R. It's a 1/3, got Defender, and tap, target creature gains haste. Okay, let me have my red wall rant. I think I teased this at my first podcast. So one of the things that one of the things that design had done a little bit and then development ended up playing up more was having this wall theme, a Defender Matters theme. And so for some reason, just the space where it ended up fitting was in red. But one of my pet peeves, and this happened all through development because I was on the development team, is so if you look at the philosophies of the color that cares the least about defenders, about walls, is red. You know, white is all about defense, loves walls. Blue is about the long game, about thinking things through. It likes walls. You know, green clearly has some big things. It'll have some walls, some natural walls. It has plants and this and that. And even black understands the importance of, you know, having the regenerator or the thing to stop you. But red is like, attack, 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 attack. Red is like, no. And, you know, red is never thinking about the future. A defender's all about the future. It's not about living in the moment. And so, I mean, I like that this card grants haste. That's red, you know, and it was an enabler to sort of get you to play things and attack with them. But the red wall theme, throughout development, I would constantly have little tirades during development and go, why is this red? And then Matt Place was the head developer. Matt goes, I sympathize with you, Mark, but I have nowhere to move it. You know, it just kind of got carved into red, and it just was something that fit. And this happens sometimes in design or end development, where you have something and you kind of want to put it somewhere else, but like the set is full and there's really no place to easily move it, and it's where it is, and you're like, oh, we need it, and it fits, and yeah, it's probably supposed to be somewhere else, but, you know. And it's the bane of my existence is when, like, things aren't the way they should color pie-wise, and the defense is kind of like, well, we can't move it, you know. Like, but it shouldn't be there in the first place. I will like the fact that it gives haste. It's at least one of the walls that encourages actual aggression, unlike some of the other red walls. Okay, next is Battle Rattle Shaman. It's a Goblin Shaman for 2/2, costs 3R. Beginning of upkeep, target creature gets +2/+0 until end of turn. So one of the strategies we ended up having is... there is a strategy that have where you get little things and sneak them through. I'll talk about it later, but the cornerstone of this mechanic, what was it called? It was called Goblin Tunneler. So there are a bunch of ways to beef things and a ways to get some of the smaller stuff through. So there was a strategy where you had a bunch of smaller guys and you kept beefing them up. And so it wasn't that you made a giant guy, but that you're small guys. And so Battle Rattle Shaman was part of the strategy. It actually was pretty good. It was a pretty interesting card. I mean, you could use it on anything for aggression. It didn't need to be on small things. But it comboed really well with Goblin Tunneler, and it was definitely... There was definitely a deck where the value of the thing was kind of the stack tricks and how you stacked it, and so you can make things unblockable and then make them bigger and such. Okay, Bear and Boar Umbra. Okay. Now, by the way, I like Rise of the Drazi. I'm venting some today just because it's fun to vent, because venting is humorous commentary. But so as I vent, I'll try to put in all the things I did like with the set, but I'm venting a little bit. So Boar and Bear Umbra is one of my pet peeves. Is I hate names in sets, in the same set, that are just too close. For example, what set was it? There was a set that had Quick Sliver and Click Slither. And I tried so hard to get that change, and I could not. So this one, Bear Umbra, Boar Umbra, they're both green Umbras, Bear and Boar, like, you know. Okay, so Bear Umbra costs 2GG. Your creature gets +2/+2, and when it untaps, you can untap some lands. I think you untap all your lands. And then Boar Umbra is 2 and a green, and your creature gets +3/+3. And both of these are Totem Armor. Totem Armor means that when the creature would die, instead you sacrifice the aura, and you essentially save the creature. So these are both, I mean, well, the names are similar because the Umbras were the Totem Armor. And, I mean, the idea of the flavor was that you took the shape of some larger creature, and so you got the essence of a boar or a bear, and I appreciate, I like that flavor a lot. I just wish they had chosen two words that were not almost the same word. it just caused confusion. You know, I played the Boar Umbra, the Bear Umbra, or the Boar Umbra? The Boar Umbra, Bear. Bear Umbra, Boar Umbra. Okay, I played the Boar Umbra, you know, like, it just causes confusion. One of the things that I constantly stress is the importance of words. Words are important. Words have meaning. Words do things. And you got to be really careful of the connotation of things. So, okay. Next, Blood Throne Vampire. So 1B for a 1/1 vampire. Sacred creature gets +2/+2 to end of turn. So I don't think this is the first time we did this card. It's possible this is the first time it's a 1/1. It might have been a 2/2 before. But this is a good example of a card where it's flavorful, but then you stick it in the right environment and it just does other things. So one of the things we did with the Eldrazi is we segregated who got what. So people often ask that, which is, we do a cool new mechanic and not everybody does the mechanic. Why can't everybody do the mechanic? And sometimes we spread the love, but sometimes it's like, oh, well, we want to break things up. We want colors to play differently. So in this set, black, red, and green leaned more toward the Eldrazi, and those were the three colors, in addition to colorless, that made Eldrazi spawn. Blue and white were a little more toward the Zendikari side, and they tended to play a little more with level up and auras, and you know they were a little more of the building up on the creature side, where the Eldrazi side was more like get out giant Eldrazi. So since black had the ability to make Eldrazi spawn, we wanted to give it a card, you know, black likes to sacrifice creatures already, so this was another way to make spawn useful, is as creatures, that as far as the Blood of the Throne Vampire cares, he doesn't care what the creature is, he doesn't care how big it is, oh, it's only a 0/1, whatever, yum yum, chomp chomp, and so this was a different way to make the spawn have value, is as fodder, because black likes to sack things, and so, and this is an example of a card where, I mean, this might be the first... I think the previous version was a 2/2, but a card like this we've done before. But just in this environment, it had a very different feel. Next, Bramble Snap, 1G, 1/1 elemental. Tap an untapped creature and get +1/+1 till end of turn. And this is another example. This is the same sort of ways to use spawn in a way that's inventive. So there's a card called Llanowar Sentinel. Ooh, I'm impressed. I remember that name. And it allows you to tap creatures to make itself bigger. This is the same basic mechanic in green. And the idea is, the spawn, I can turn the spawn into pumping this creature up, and so it essentially turns the spawn into value attack-wise. So if I have three spawn out, this guy becomes a 4/4, you know, and even just the threat of spawn, you know, it allows you to get through because you knew the audience, I mean, your opponent knew that you could make it bigger. Then we get to Brimstone Mage. Okay, so this is our first level up guy. I decided to pick one or two level up guys to talk about. I chose him just because he was interesting to me. And once again, let me stress, it goes down the top of the power toughness on the top, on the first highest level in the card is the original one. And then it goes down. And what we did is the first, so you had to have an ability called level up. And the level up ability, the way it worked was, you had the first text box, then you added the second text box, then you added the third text box. And the rules were, you gained everything you already had, except the power toughness would overrule it. But if you had something in the first text box, I believe you would get it in the second text box. Is that correct? I think so. That's why level up only had to be in the first text box, because you still had it in the second text box and the third. Okay, so at first, this creature, when you first play it, it's 2R, Human Shaman, it's a 2-2 creature. All it has is the level ability for 3 red. Now, level up had to be kind of expensive because the value of being able to play a 2R, 2-2, that is a great ogre. Not a great creature, but it's not a horrible creature. It's a little below the curve, but it's something that, like, the fact that it has value, I mean, it has a lot of value. You can turn it into something very powerful. Okay, so then you pay the level, and every time you pay a level, you get a level counter. And then when you reach a certain number of levels, so for example, this one, level 1 to 2, as soon as you have one level token counter, or two level counters, it turned into a Tim. It turned into a prodigal pyromancer, if you will. Taps to do 1 damage to target creature or player. Okay, so all you have to do is, you put it up for 2R, it's a 2-2. You spend 3R once, it becomes a creature that can tap to do damage. Okay, now, when you get to 3+, and the reason, by the way, we said plus, people are like, well, why did you say 3 level is, there are sometimes other reasons why you might make them over of the maximum, and so we just for clarity, like, we didn't want you somehow making it a 4th level, people go, well, it loses all its abilities, now it's not level, so we said level 3+, just for clarity. When you get to level 3, level 1 and 2, by the way, not only did it gain the tap do damage ability, it also went from a 2-2 to a 2-3. Then, on the 3+ scale, it turns into a 2-4, and it taps to do 3 damage to target creature or player. So there's a lot going on, by the way. So aesthetically, for example, notice that we were trying to make the evolution make sense. So it goes from a 2-2 to a 2-3 to a 2-4. Also, we decided to make it into do 1 damage, and then we jumped to 3 damage, trying to make an exciting, make the final ability exciting. And so the idea is, this thing starts small, it's not particularly strong, with a little bit of investment, and you get more value out of it, and with a lot of investment, so you have to pay 2R to get it into play, and then you have to play 3R 3 times, so that's 12 mana. So 12 mana plus your initial 3, 15 mana, you got a 3 power guy. I mean, you can do 3 damage, that's very powerful. Now, a lot of people wanted to look at it and go, wow, for 15 mana, shouldn't I get more than that? I'm like, no, you're forgetting the opportunity cost, which for starters means you got a 2-2 creature when you played this. You then, after you spent a little bit of mana, you got a Tim. You were able to do 1 damage. That was valuable. That had value. And then eventually, you were able to upgrade it. So the big difference here is opportunity cost means that whenever I had mana, I was able to make use of the mana. I didn't have to do it all at once. I didn't have to wait till I got 15 mana on the table. I could use it when I got it. And so that is a lot different. It's not like it costs 15 mana and it taps deals 3. That's a different card. And a lot worse card than this. Okay, next. Brood Warden. 3 green and green. 4/4 Eldrazi Drone. Eldrazi spawn. Get +2/+1. So this was part of the green overrun with spawn strategy. Like, the idea is get a lot of spawn out, and then I need a finisher card. And this is one of the cards that you could do to help do the finishing. Is, I get a whole bunch of spawn out, now all my spawn go from 0/1 into 2/2s. Notice it's +2/+1 because it goes with spawn, and spawn all have a 0/1. It gives you the stats, so it squares them, makes it nice and easy. And like I said, one of the things you'll see about spawn is they go through it, like Bloodthirst Vampire, Bramble Snap, a Brood Warden. They all really do really different things with it, and that's one of the neat things about the spawn. Okay, Cast Through Time. It's an enchantment. Costs 4 blue. So it's 4 colorless, 3 blue. All your instants and sorcerers gain rebound. So remember, rebound is a mechanic that says when you cast a spell, it goes off right now, and it goes off at the beginning of next turn. So one of the things we like to do, it's fun, is to take our mechanics and go, everything that's applicable gains this mechanic. So this mechanic only appeared in instants and sorceries, so obviously there's only granted instant sorceries. But in general, in some ways, it's kind of forked all your spells. I mean, it forks one of the copies is later, it's the next turn. But the other fun thing, and the reason this is the kind of card that can be appreciated in many different levels. I think the spikes out there are just like, okay, I double all my effects, that's good. You know, and even to the Timmies, doubling is good. But to the Johnnies out there, it's like, well, what spells can I get in, you know, what spells can I do neat things with? You know, and this has a lot of fun build around me. It's like, well, if I could add rebound to any spell, ooh, what spells would I want to add rebound to? And I see some very fun decks with Cats of Time. It was never super powerful, but it was fun, which is what it was designed to be. Corpse Hatch, 3BB sorcery. Destroy target non-black creature and get 2 spawn. So one of the things they did with the spawn is we put him as rider on a lot of cards. And so this is a card that, you know, 3BB, 3 black-black, is... although, it's funny, early in the day, we used to make all kill very cheap, and we finally got to the realization that limited was more interesting if, for limited, not all the kills were so cheap. The ones meant for constructed were on the cheaper side. And this is definitely something we're like, okay, we like having slightly more expensive kill spells, but oh, we can give some extra rider on it. So it could cost 5 mana, but oh, it nets you some tokens. And the thing about the Eldrazi is, it's okay to have mana production stemming from larger spells. Like, this is a 5 mana spell. But the things you're trying to get on the Eldrazi side are really big. So it's okay that of the 5 mana, I'm reducing more mana. Excuse me. One more time. Good tonight. Okay. Yeah, and one thing I'm trying to point out is that your mana ramping is very, very different in a set where you're trying to build to the giant, giant things. And that a lot of times having 5 mana spells that get you more mana, well, what's that going to do for you? How big a spell are you going to cast? In normal environments, maybe not that much. In this environment, oh, well, I cast a 5-cast spell this turn. I get 2 2 spawn. Maybe I get a land next turn. I could cast an 8-mana thing next turn. And even then, I haven't even got to the Titans yet. I still need some more mana before I get to the Titans. Okay, Daggerback Vasquez. 2G, 2-2, Death Touch. So what's this doing there? So one of the things we definitely wanted to make sure was... we wanted to get answers to the big giant creatures. I get a giant Eldrazi out. So the reason we like Death Touch better than, say, like a just too many kill spells is that this card, it's an answer. If you get it out, your opponent can't just attack with their Eldrazi, but it doesn't instantly destroy it. It kind of negates it. It sort of like makes them find their next answer. And so rather than remove the Eldrazi, it stalls them until they look for the answer to this problem. But when they find the answer, then they can get rid of it and then attack again. And so it does a good job of sort of, instead of just completely dealing with the problem, it's an answer to the problem that can be answered. And having answers with answers helps a lot when you're trying to sort of build up Battlecruiser magic. Next, Distortion Strike. So sorcery for blue. Target creature gets +1/+0 and is unblockable and has rebound. So this was my favorite rebound card. It was really, really interesting and limited. There was a red-blue archetype. I talked about this earlier with, I forget the name of it, the one that gave +2/+0 at the beginning of every upkeep, where you had these creatures and you sort of buffed them and made them unblockable and sort of snuck through with a lot of small guys. It's my favorite deck to draft in this environment. And it was a quirky deck, and it's one of those decks where you had to understand the pieces to it, where we gave you all the pieces, but you had to understand what they were, and like this was a key spell in the deck. And then the neat thing about it was, it wasn't one of, like, the Eldrazi had this ramp into giant Eldrazi, and there was, level up guys, and there was an aura plan, but this was just a little bit different. It wasn't the straight and narrow, and the development definitely played up this theme. This was one of my favorite decks, and we snuck some key spells in to make it work, and this was one of them. And, you know, it was my favorite, draft. I'm very famous in R&D in that I figure out one thing I can do well in draft, because I'm not quite as strong as most R&D, and they come from the Pro Tour. So my strategy is I figure out one strategy that I know I can do, that I can learn and get good at, and that way when I'm drafting with them, you know, I have my one strategy that I understand what I'm supposed to be doing with it. Makes it predictable, they know what I'm drafting, but I'm not as talented a drafter as most diverse of R&D, for those that did not know. Domestication, 2UU aura, enchant creature, gain control of target creature, and then at the end of any turn, if you have power 4 or greater, it falls off. So one of this thing was, it's a means to deal with smaller creatures, but if your opponent has ways to get bigger, you know, you can't steal big things, you can only steal small things. And there are ways to make small things bigger to knock this off. So we liked the idea that not only... it could have just said enchant power 3 or less. So why did we do it the way we did it? Because we liked that there were means that you could put auras on your... Like, let's say your opponent steals your creature. Well, you could put an Umbra on it or something to make it big enough, and then you get it back. Or you could Giant Growth or, you know, some sort of Giant Growth boosting thing to get it back. That it just had neat interactions. And one of the things that's fun is sometimes you want to do things just a straight and narrow way, and sometimes you just want to chicker up a little bit, just have a combo with things and tweak around. And this one definitely has a lot of fun where you steal stuff, but there's ways to get it back. There are not traditional ways that you deal with control magic. Next, Drana Kalastria, Blood Chief. Costs 3 black-black, legendary creature, vampire shaman, 4/4 flyer. For XBB, target creature gets -X/-0, and she gets +X/+0. I'm sorry, gets -0/-X, and she gets +X/+0. So this card is one of those cards where we do a lot of fun mirroring things. She gets to kill things, and while killing things, she grows stronger. The flavor, obviously, is that she's you know, a vampire, and she's attacking them, and as she drains their blood, they die, and she gets stronger. But the other thing I like, this is the aesthetics of thing, the fact that one is... You know, it's -0/-X, and she's +X/+0. It just, there's a nice parallel there. There's a mirror, which is sort of fun. And I talk about this a lot, but the reason aesthetics are important is not so much, it just creates the sort of central sense that things work. It's kind of like when you read a poem, or just when you read prose of any kind. There's a lot of things that you learn as a writer or as a poet that just make things more... feel better, because when behind the scenes the structure just sort of matches, you know, when you use alliteration or when you watch your meter or you use certain word choice, that it just has an effect. That there are things that you can do that have an effect on your audience, and if you want to be an artist, one of the things you do is you want to understand what those things are, because the audience might not even be consciously aware why things feel better to them, but they do. And so why does design care so much about aesthetics? It just makes things feel better. The fact that this is -0/-X and then +X/+0, it has this nice little balance to it, it just feels better. The car, even if you're not consciously aware of it, you know, the aesthetics, it's kind of like, and people do notice. I'm not saying people never notice, but it's the kind of thing that just, in general, us being careful of aesthetics. And as I talked about, like, with the level-up guys, like the 2-2, 2-3, 2-4, I spent a lot of time on the level-up guys trying to make sure that the as much as I could. I mean, development had to change a few things for power reasons, but I tried to make sure that there was an evolution, that my rule to them was, if I showed you the first level up and the second level up, that you could make some guess at what the third level up is, that there's a pattern that you're sort of following. And I tried really hard because, like I said, I'm one of the biggest believers of the importance of aesthetics. Next, Eel Umbra. It's a 1U aura. It's flash, +1/+1 to your creature, enchant creature, and it's totem armor. And this is a good example of using... One of the things about auras that are very interesting is that you definitely can use auras in lots of different ways. And this card, in some ways, kind of is a counterspell. I mean, it's a counterspell that protects your creatures from certain types of things. It also is a combat trick. So it has a bunch of different functions. You know, for example, let's say I just know my creature is going to die. You're going to cast a spell and kill my creature. I could flash this on and just... Essentially, it's like, you know, countering the spell that kills my creature, because the umber will, the totem armor will die and save the creature. And so, but they didn't see that coming because it had flash. Other side is a combat trick where I can, all of a sudden my creature is +1/+1. You didn't expect it. Or, you know, my creature is +1/+1. I'm able to kill your creature, and then even if my creature would die, now it doesn't die. So there's a lot of, I mean, Eel Umber is a good example of a pretty simple card. There's not a lot of words on the card. I mean, it's got totem armor, so. But it's, as totem armor cards go, it's pretty simple. Flash +1/+1. And that those there's a lot going on there. There's a lot you can do with flash and +1/+1. It is surprising kind of the value that you can get. Okay, well, I'm pulling into the parking space. So, anyway, how far did I get? I got to E. Okay, guys, this might be a longer series. But anyway, hopefully you're enjoying it. It's a lot of fun. I love going through cards, remembering things, and talking about what we did. And these podcasts are very popular. That's why I do them, and why I've decided to do long versions of them. Like, in the beginning, I did, you know, I would do the whole set in one thing, and I just wasn't getting to a lot of things, and people seemed to enjoy the story. So I will continue doing that. So anyway, thank you very much for joining me today. And as much as I love talking about magic history and magic design, even more, I like making magic. So it's time for me to go. Talk to you guys next time.